Welcome to Vox Lab, the podcast series of Precision Talks, and listen to the voices of the scientists working towards precision toxicology to better protect human health and the environment.
Welcome to this new episode of Vox Lab, the podcast by Precision Talks, a consortium working to develop chemical safety assessments without the use of mammalian animals. I'm today with Barbara Ambrobin and David Dupasquier. They are working for WatchFrog, an SME in France. Hello, David. Hello, Barbara. Thank you for being with us today.
And hello, Jeanne. Thank
hello,
you.
Jeanne.
Welcome. Today, we are going to talk about one of the organism species that's part of our project, Xenopus. It's a frog. Barbara, can you tell us a few words about WatchFrog and its activities?
Yes, of course. WatchFrog is exclusively dedicated to the assessment of endocrine disruptors for more than 15 years now. Originally experts from the French National Natural History Museum, our job consisted of studying the fundamental role of the endocrine system in the development and functioning of human physiology, which is conserved throughout the evolution of species. Following a request from the cosmetics industry, we suspected that endocrine disruptors would become a major environmental health issue in the coming years, and not being authorized to use laboratory animals for their tests, WatchFrog was created in 2005. We now have three tests covering the three endocrine axes of greatest interest: thyroid, estrogenic, and androgenic. Furthermore, our test protocols take advantage of whole organisms and therefore also reveal the impacts of endocrine disruptors on steroidogenesis. Our aim is to provide our customers with a strong weight of evidence in accordance with the 3R's principle.
The 3R principle stands for the replacement, reduction, and refinement of the use of animal in research. And Xenopus is a 3R compliant model, which means that we can use it to replace mammalians, in particular because we use embryos. David, can you introduce us to the Xenopus model that we're going to discuss today? Where it comes from, where does it live, in what environment, how does it reproduce, what does it eat? Tell us more about it, please.
Okay, so Xenopus is an aquatic frog. It is native from sub-Saharan Africa. And there is not only one Xenopus species. There is 20 Xenopus species that have been described. And the best known species are Xenopus levis and Xenopus tropicalis, which are commonly used as model organisms in biology. And Xenopus levis is also known as the African clawed frog because it has three short claws on each foot. And also, this is why Xenopus means in Latin strange foot. And if you like to imagine a Xenopus, you have to imagine. So it basically, it looks like a frog or a toad. The size of a Xenopus levis female is something like 10 centimeters. The males are smaller, probably 7 centimeters. And these usually have a brown or dark green color. Xenopus is a quite inactive creature, living in a river or small ponds, as well as in big lakes in Africa. It is a good swimmer that spends most of his life underwater, coming to the surface only to breathe, probably a few times per hour. And during the rainy season, Xenopus could migrate from one pond to another by crawling on the wet grass after heavy rains. And this is probably the only time when Xenopus will leave the water. Apart from that, Xenopus are carnivorous species. The adult frogs are both predators and scavengers. They eat small fish and insects.
And why this species of interest for scientists? How did this frog enter the world of testing and toxicology?
So Xenopus was described and named by a French zoologist, which is named François-Marie Dodin in 1803. It was first used for a basic biology study at the beginning of the 20th century, but its destiny really changed in the 30s. In 1931, a professor named Lancelot Ogben and his student named Hillel Shapiro developed a pregnancy test using Xenopus. They noticed that if you inject urine from a pregnant woman under the skin of the Xenopus female, this will induce the ovulation of the female and the frog will lay eggs. And this is a very easy endpoint to assess. In fact, the female is reacting to an hormone, which is gonadotropin, which is the pregnancy hormone. And this discovery has two consequences. The first is that Xenopus female were used as a pregnancy test for two decades until the development of the biological tests that are now used and that were developed in the 60s. And thousands of Xenopus female were then shipped from South Africa to all over the world and used in hospital as pregnancy test. And the second consequences was that no biologists have a way to control the ovulation and reproduction of Xenopus, and thus discover the value of Xenopus in studying embryonic development. You have to keep in mind that early researchers studying amphibian biology and embryology have to collect the specimen from the wild at that time. They depend from environmental parameter that they could not control, because the reproduction of amphibian is induced by the weather in the spring, and then the amphibian will start to lay eggs in pond. So this means that at that time, the researcher went to the field, tried to find some embryo, and if they were lucky, they found some embryo. If they were unlucky, they found only nothing or just old embryo. So now, with the hormonal injection of Xenopus, they have the possibility to inject the frog and to have the embryo exactly the day that they wanted to perform an experiment. And that was really a real advance.
So it means that Xenopus embryos are very easy to grow in the labs. What are the other advantages of this model?
Really, the first advantage is the ease of housing. It is really the easiest amphibian to maintain. They could be maintained in fully aquatic condition. So it's really basically like fish. You have to keep in mind that other frogs or amphibians need what we call the aquaterrariums. So this is tanks with both a terrestrial and an aquatic section. And also other amphibians, most of the other amphibians needs to be fed only with live food. So like worms or insects. So you understand that it is quite complex to maintain large population of amphibian in this condition. So with Xenopus, you will just deal with organism that will be raised like fish. Another advantage is that Xenopus is very robust. In nature, they can survive under the mud in the dry pond during the dry season. And they could survive for 1 year in this condition without any food. In the laboratory, they could tolerate variation in temperature, pH, or lightning. And as I mentioned previously, the reproduction could be induced with hormonal injection, but this could be also combined with the possibility to perform in vitro fertilization. And if you perform in vitro fertilization, you will obtain thousands of embryos that are perfectly synchronized in their development. So this is really gold for the embryologists, because they could work on a batch of thousands of embryo perfectly synchronized, and they could do some manipulation of the embryo, some micro injection, and they could have a plenty of control embryo, plenty of different experimental group. And the embryo is quite large, it's probably 2 millimeter of diameter, and this will be amenable for a lot of different techniques that are very useful, such as in situ hybridization, imaging, micro manipulation. You could micro dissect an embryo by cutting cutting it into different pieces to retrieve some blastomere. You could microinject a given blastomere. And of course, you could microinject a lot of different reagents. You could microinject DNA, RNA, proteins in order to do some gain of function study. But also, you could inactivate some gene product by using morpholino, antisense RNA, or dominant negative protein, or even antibody could be injected. And by combining all these techniques, you could study the early development or the late development of the embryo.
You can follow the development of the embryo, but how long does it take before etching?
The early development is quite fast. The embryo will divide like every 30 minutes at the beginning. So it's like a bacteria. It's dividing very quickly. And then the embryo will start to look as a tadpole in something like 5 days. So then it will have a completed organogenesis. It will be able to swim. And then the tadpole will grow. And it will grow probably for, depending of the condition, but it will grow for 4 or 5 weeks, and then it will enter metamorphosis. And metamorphosis is really a fascinating process. It's not only by the impressive coordination of changes that lead to the transformation from the tadpole to the frog, but also because metamorphosis is entirely controlled by a single hormone, which is thyroid hormone. And by the way, this was discovered by Friedrich Goudenarsch in 1912 by doing a very simple experiment. This professor fed Rana temporaria tadpole with fragments of different horses' organs. And then he noticed that only the thyroid fragment were able to induce the metamorphosis of the tadpole. And it was the beginning of a new research area for endocrinologists. That showed after Goudenarsch that exposing tadpole to anti-thyroid molecule, such as thyroid hormone inhibitor, for instance, could completely block the transformation of the tadpole into a frog. This really opened this new field of research on amphibian with the aim to understand how the thyroid hormone will control and synchronize all the process of the transformation from the tadpole to the frog.
And so with all this knowledge that was accumulated, how is Xenopus now used in biological studies?
So Xenopus has long been an important tool for the in vivo studies in molecular, cellular, and developmental biology of vertebrates animals. This study was using oocyte or early developmental stages, but you have to know that also because the Xenopus oocyte is quite big, it could produce large amount of cell-free extract from the Xenopus oocyte. And this was very helpful to understand and to identify the actors of the control of the cell cycle in the vertebrates cells. And then when genomic techniques were developed, Xenopus began to be used to investigate the human disease gene. And Xenopus was the first vertebrate animal for which methods were developed to allow a rapid analysis of gene function. And to do that, you just misexpress a gene product by doing the microinjection of the microRNA of the messenger RNA into the early embryo. And apart from that, there was this development of a technique for performing transgenesis in Xenopus. That opened the possibility 30 years ago to extensively use the Xenopus to study the effect of gain of function of gene during the late developmental stages. And apart from that, Xenopus is used in many fields of biology, including immunology, evolution of gene, but also physiology. Of course, and endocrinology, including endocrine disruption, which is the main topic of WatchFrog. And you have to know that at the moment, there are three test guidelines, so protocol validated by OECD, that are used to do the regulatory assessment of pesticide and biocide, Of course, with the aim of identifying the pesticide that have endocrine disruption property.
I've seen that there were quite some rewards of scientists working on that very fascinating animal species. Maybe several Nobel Prize, am I correct?
Yes, that's true. The first one is in October 2001. Tim Hunt was awarded the Nobel Prize in Medicine or Physiology. He discovered the major drivers of the cell cycle, cyclin and cyclin-dependent kinases using urchin and Xenopus eggs. He showed that injecting a sea urchin cycling in a Xenopus egg promoted progression in the cell cycle and demonstrated the role of this protein and its conservation among animals. The second one was in 2012. It was John Gordon and Shinya Yamanaka that shared a Nobel Prize, again for medicine or physiology, for their work on nuclear reprogramming. 50 years ago, John Gordon used the Xenopus to show that the nuclei from specialized cells could be reprogrammed to give rise to a complete animal. By nuclear transplantation, he introduced the nuclei from Xenopus intestinal cells in Xenopus eggs that had been enucleated by ultraviolet irradiation. After serial transplantation, this nuclei gave rise to a complete animal. This was the first cloning in vertebrate animals, an approach which later gave rise to Dolly, the famous Dolly, the sheep, in the 1990s.
Thank you very much, Barbara, for this complimentary information. So, if I understand well, I mean, if we could make all this link from Xenopus through, well, even creating a ship, it means that this frog has some link with other animal species. So can we extrapolate and say that they have some genes and other common points with humans, for instance?
Yes, of course. Xenopus are vertebrate, and at a fundamental level, most genes, signaling pathway, biological function, or organs are highly conserved between man and all vertebrate species. And if we consider frogs and humans share the same basic organs, of course. Both have lungs, kidneys, stomach, and heart, brain, liver, etc. But on the whole, the organ structure is similar, but frogs have, of course, less complex anatomy. For example, they don't have ribs or a diaphragm, for example. So if you compare the proximity of frogs to human to the proximity of fish to human, frogs is evolutionary and physiologically closer to human. Because, of course, they are tetrapods. So Xenopus do have lungs, they do have a three-chamber heart, and they have a close evolutionary relationship with humans. In terms of genomic, for example, the Xenopus tropicalis genome contains more than 20,000 genes. And human, probably you know that humans have about 23,000 genes. And the study showed that most of the genes are common in the two species. And Xenopus have been estimated to share something like 80% of identified human disease gene. And this is the reason why researchers are increasingly using the experimental advantages of Xenopus at the moment to study and model human disease. And also, Xenopus has a complex immune system with components that are shared with humans. But these components are missing in other aquatic vertebrates like fish. So there is a high degree of similarity and evolutionary conservation between Xenopus and mammalian immune system. And of course, this is why we are using Xenopus. The endocrine system is also highly conserved between the man and between human and Xenopus. The hormones themselves are identical, and the structure of the protein involved in the endocrine system, such as the hormonal receptor, the transporter, or the different enzymes involved in the process, are very close.
We are using four other organism species in Precision Talks that have a lot of common as well with humans, and that's the reason why we are tapping on their different characteristic to be sure and to maximize the results of our project to assess the safety of chemicals in the future. But why has WatchFrog built his laboratory on this model in particular? Why is on Xenopus embryos?
Disrupting thyroid hormone signaling is a major threat for human health and the environment. As I already say, amphibian metamorphosis is the most spectacular example in the animal kingdom for illustrating the role of hormones. Thyroid hormones control limb growth, turn gills into lungs, replace neurons for swimming by neurons for walking, remodel the intestine to adapt to different food, etc. Without thyroid hormones, a tadpole remains a larva and a human baby suffers from cretinism. So this is why the amphibian Xenopus metamorphosis has always been a specific model for thyroid disruption, more specific than fish or even rat models. However, WatchFrog laboratory was created because we wanted to replace animal testing by alternative methods, which would be sufficiently specific to protect the environment from thyroid disruptor, but also would help avoiding killing thousands of frogs. This is why we decided to use the embryos of Xenopus, which represent in terms of evolution, the first accessible endocrine system that can be studied in vitro.
So if I can sum up a little bit, a lot of genes in common with humans, very important for anything related to endocrine disruptors that maybe other alternative organism species rather than mammalians could show in the results. Can you explain a bit better what are the ethical interests of using these embryonic models and maybe the economic advantage of this model compared to traditional mammalian rodents models that are used?
Yes, it's also a good point. The external development of embryos of fish and amphibians provide a unique solution to access a vertebrate model whilst retaining the technical advantages of working at an in vitro scale, as I already mentioned. From an ethical point of view, before independent feeding, once the embryos are no longer dependent on the yolk of the egg for nutrition, the neurological development of the embryo is not capable of transmitting information of pain, of suffering. It's very important. At this stage, just after hatching, the embryo is not capable of adapting its behavior based on learning from pain. We consider this to represent the best compromise to provide a tool sensitive enough for endocrine disruptors identification while not causing pain or suffering using laboratory animals. Another ethical advantage is that economical productivity encourages animal welfare when using these early stages as adult female amphibians produce thousands of eggs, and the happier, calmer, and healthier they are, the larger number of good quality eggs we obtain for testing, which is very important for us. So the compatibility with genetic reporters, traditional fluorescent proteins provide a rapid screening which reveal in the first few hours or day of exposure, the early stages of a morphogenetic response to potential endocrine disruptors. Now, speaking about the economic advantage, just for example, an AMA test, OECD 231, using adult Xenopus, costs between 70,000 and 90,000 euro per substance. Whereas for Xita, OECD 248, performed at WatchFrog, costs around 7,500 euro, which means 10 times less. Every time Xita replaces an AMA, it saves 500 frogs.
In Precision Talks, we are using 5 organism species, among which Xenopus. We presented already 3 other models in this podcast, and the 5th one will be presented soon. Barbara, can you explain us how Precision Talks, the scientists in Precision Talks will use Xenopus embryos in this project?
Yes, the Xenopus Laevis model is used by 7 partners in Precision Talks, having expertise in multiple alternative animal and human cell model systems to develop efficient comparative toxicological exposure scenarios. So the 3 R's compliant alternative animal model species that we use includes the Xenopus model, which is a good representative of vertebrate models, making it possible to draw a parallel with the wall of this phylum via, as already discussed, the conservation of the mechanism. So the idea is to test the idea then that we are going to do in the Precision Talks model is to test a large number of chemicals of interest preselected by the exposure group, by aquatic exposure of tadpoles, and to establish toxicity kinetics. Then tadpoles are frozen in liquid nitrogen and sent to other partners for transcriptomics and metabolomics analysis in order to build a model using this molecular data and information from the observed adverse outcomes. The results will flow into the development of refined assays and specific hazard testing paradigms of predicting human toxicity using ethically acceptable alternative animal models, which is really important for us.
So this project will accelerate the assessment of chemical safety thanks to this 5 organism species alternative to mammalians, traditional testing, and compared with human cell lines. So we hope so. So we will have a comparison across species that will be representative of the tree of life. That's the concept that we call toxicology by descent. But I think you are not using Xenopus only in this European project. Watch Frog is also using Xenopus in other projects?
Yes, that's true. For example, we also use the Xenopus embryos in projects on water resources, such as river water, in PAC, for example, meaning management of the chemical analysis of water quality by our bioassays. This project, supported under the Investments for the Future program, which is PIA, operated by ADEM, the French Environment and Energy Management Agency, aims to develop a method to identify the chemicals that have the greatest impact on the physiology of aquatic organisms among thousands of chemicals present in surface waters. It offers an innovative way of directing chemical analysis by carrying out bioassays. It will end in June of this year, and we are pretty enthusiastic about the results. We also use this model in other EU-funded Horizon 2020 projects, such as Athena, where our goal is to screen the thyroid activity of a set of chemicals using this time our genetically modified fluorescent Xenopus embryos. And the last one, even if the list is not exhaustive, we have several other projects where we use the Xenopus embryo, is NANOCO. It is a shared project with Grenoble Alpes University on the endocrine activity of nanoparticles and their possible potentiation effect when associated with molecules identified as having endocrine activity. As you can see, the Xenopus model has an interesting history and a wide range of applications.
Thank you very much, Barbara. Thank you very much, David, from Watch Frog, our French partner in Precision Talks, for introducing us to this fascinating world of the Xenopus that will definitely help reducing animal testing while improving human health and also the protection of the ecosystems and the environment. Thank you very much again, Barbara.
Thank you, Jeanne, for the invitation.
Thank you very much, David.
Thank you, Jeanne.
And I wish you good luck in all your projects and looking forward to see some results. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. To learn more about Precision Toxicology and listen to the new episodes of VoxLam, visit our website, precisiontox.org, and follow us on Twitter at @PrecisionTox. This project has received the financial support of the European Union's Horizon 2020 program. The content of this program only reflects the author's view. The EU cannot be held responsible for any information contained therein.